This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This may, I have not done an intro to the show in a long time, so I don't know how high energy this is going to be, but it might be weird, so prepare yourselves. Love this that. Could be strange. Hey! Hello, halfling!
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
We're about to get into something real big now.
It's me, Jeremy Gunn.
Wow!
I went in with the full James Brown. Yeah, exactly. It's me, Jeremy's. No, I can't do a James
Jeremy's,
Brown thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Jeremy Brown.
Yeah.
Anyway, but Jessica Petra calls me JJ Cobblestones McGalloway. Oh wait, no, I already used that
one. Yeah, you did. Yeah.
But Ralph Chavez calls me Jeremy the Jiren Gob Cobb.
I hope. What does that mean? I don't
know.
Apologies if that's something bad, because I have no idea what it means. I don't know.
Well, you know what? It's from one of our patrons, so I'm going to assume it's not bad.
Hopefully.
I am joined today by...
Hi, I'm Liv Kennedy, but you can call me Liv. I asked Jeremy to do the intro today because my voice is a little bit... and that was fun. So thank you for that, Jeremy. That was great.
You're very welcome. Yeah. But we're not alone
what?
in this hell of our own making. We have a very special guest.
We do. Wow.
Yes, everyone.
Join
get
us
ready.
In hell.
Yes, get ready. We've brought you down into the pit with us.
Yeah.
Get ready, everyone, to meet online content creator, the Frank Castle of Trolls, Jasmine Boulard.
Yay!
Hello. I'm very excited to be here. We've already gotten to so many deep conversations before we even hit record.
It's so true.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Feral
Do you want to tell everybody the fact that you told us about hogs, about pigs before
yeah,
we started?
I think it's
like the most
information. Yeah.
American thing I probably could have brought to this conversation. In my defense, Jeremy brought it up. Then America has a feral hog problem. But yes, I only recently learned that if you take a sort of your standard run-of-the-mill farm pig and they somehow escape enclosure and go into the woods, they very rapidly become sort of like the hog king from Princess Mononoke. They grow tusks, they get muscular, so those sort of rotund, pink, soft creatures we've come to think of as pigs are not actually that far removed from their feral hog ancestors. We've done nothing really to domesticate them. It's just, by virtue of being in a farm, they essentially never mature fully. And the second, it doesn't take generations of evolution. If you just, it happens almost,
pop them out there,
almost instantly. Yeah.
Flourish. Yeah.
Except they're really scary.
Can you imagine if that happened with dogs? Like if your pug escaped,
they just turned into a
within
wolf.
Within weeks, it would just be a small wolf.
It's just, really muscular, flat-faced wolf.
Really brachycephalic wolf.
Yeah.
Still like snorting and snuffling, but like grayish fur.
Oh, he can't run fast. He can't do that. No. Help him.
Like, I was going to say the labored breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Of the wild pug.
You would always know he was coming, at least. You would be like, what's that? Just, oh, God.
Yeah,
oh God.
Fully scavenger. Yeah. Could never be an ambush hunter. Everyone knows that the pug is in town. Would a pug wolf just be a pulf?
Pulf.
Or would it be a wug?
A wug.
That sounds like the name of a TTRPG, to be honest. Pug wolf.
Pug wolf.
Yes. Mm. Well, there's Pugmire, right?
I think so. Where you can play as dogs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pug Wolf sounds like the next, maybe like the World of Darkness version of that.
I love that. Absolutely.
Pug Wolf, the Apocalypse. We have
Werewolf, the Apocalypse. Yeah, Pug Wolf, the Uprising or something.
Yeah, and it's like Pug domesticated dogs that have escaped to the wild and found their werewolf roots, maybe? I don't know.
Honestly, there's something there. I think that's pretty cool.
Let's make it.
Yeah, we'll do it.
Before I hard pivot into the actual conversation, I really want to mention, did y'all hear that they have discovered a fox dog hybrid?
Is it a fox? No, wait, what? No, wait.
It's a fox that mated with a dog and produced viable offspring.
No, I've not heard of this.
I think in South America this occurred.
I am intrigued, though. And now I have to do a Google, and I can't.
People thought it was impossible because they thought that foxes were too far removed from dogs genetically.
Yeah.
But they found one that, I guess, a wild fox met up with a dog and they had a baby.
Well, that's so sweet.
They both like swiped right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Yeah, they both they both matched, absolutely. Oh, he's cute. I found him, I think. Cute. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they exist. That's great. Thank you for this wonderful information, Jeremy. Thank you.
Absolutely.
I want one.
I'm gonna hard pivot now.
Okay,
I'm gonna hard pivot. Jasmine, can you please give us, we've just talked about the origin stories of feral hogs and of cat dog, or excuse me, fox dog hybrids.
Oh my goodness, excuse
you. And of the upcoming, the next in the Vampire the Masquerade series. Mm-hmm. Can you please give us your nerdy origin story?
Oh, wow. I went from being like the uncool version of a nerd to the cool version of a nerd just by virtue of, proximity. Mm-hmm. Because growing up, I was a mathlete, you know, like I was that sick. Kind of a nerd. You know, I was really into like science and I graduated top of my class in Punjab. So I went to school in India and it was like what I would call the uncool version of a nerd. Loved reading, loved math, loved school. Was really sad during the summer vacation.
Oh, dang.
To the point that my parents would send me to summer, when I did live in America, they'd send me to summer school. Even though I did not need the grade boost because I...
What did you like about school so much?
Yeah.
It's really weird. I think I've always enjoyed it. To this day, I actually still miss it. I really like homework.
Wow.
Sounds so freakish.
Oh my God.
But like book, if it was like book report week, I was giddy.
Wow.
Because the thing I used to get in trouble for in school was talking too much. Mm-hmm. So like the idea that I could be rewarded or I was expected to like read a book and give my opinion on it. I really longed for that because at home, you know, if I sat there and talked about a book I read, my parents were like, okay, that's enough.
okay.
It explains my career a lot because it's like, it wasn't enough for me to like consume media. I also needed to like talk about that, you know? When I was a little kid and The Mummy dropped, that was like the only thing I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
For like a year. I felt bad for people in my family because they were so burnt out on it because it's just like a little version of me that's like, have you seen Brendan Fraser and the Mummy? You know, for like, like every single day though, you know, like, so like, my dad took me to see Brendan Fraser and the Mummy and
they know the I'm Mummy right front to you. Back.
I'm going to go to Egypt
it.
Now because I'm going to join the people and the dudes that tell all the white people not to go to the pyramids. I'm going to be like them.
Just
you know?
Stood outside, like don't do
that. Just
do
get
it.
Ignored by the white people who just have to go anyway.
For some reason, Oded Fehr, like that character, he played was like my, I don't know, like my only reason for like existence back then. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, these people are like, I wanted the face tattoos. Now I'm like, okay, that probably, I'm really happy I didn't go that route.
Sometimes it's
probably
fun
would have been
that
like problematic to get those tattoos. But I was just like, oh my God, this is the coolest thing I've seen in my life. And it's
like
interesting
the
watching it again
moment.
As an adult, you know.
People. Yeah.
It has some issues, but I still like it. I think that's a lot of media. You're like, oh. Like when I found out that the character from Short Circuit was an Indian. I didn't find that out until recently when I watched Master of None. And I was like, no, Short Circuit with the Johnny Five is alive. And the Indian engineer, and they're like, no, that was like a brown faced character. And I was like, oh,
no.
So I didn't realize that until like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, the same thing happened. That has definitely happened for me with a lot of stuff that I enjoyed. Like, I really liked the Indiana Jones movies.
Mm-hmm.
And now I watch them and I'm like, Well, hey, look, the him with the bullwhip is still cool, I guess. But the rest of it's just, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially the second one. The second one is like, ooh.
Yeah. I never got into Indiana Jones because the way, I don't know if it was like my timing of when I was a kid, but that was like the chilled monkey brains. Like, people would ask me if I ate monkey brains like all the time.
Really?
Ooh.
Yeah, because I guess I don't think I've seen Temple of Doom. But in it, I guess they eat monkey brains. And so kids at school would ask me if my lunch was monkey brains. And I remember being like, most of our food is vegetarian.
Yeah.
Like, it was like so wild to me.
Yeah.
I think my answer most of the time was like, I wouldn't kill a monkey. They're really vengeful and they're really hard to kill.
You do not want to mess
if you grow up in India, like, monkeys are freaking scary.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, first of all, they remember your face.
Oh my god. Because they're gonna rip it off. They're gonna take it.
Yeah, and they're vengeful. So the way they fight each other is they go for the face and the genitals, and because we're monkey shaped, when they attack humans, they go for the face and the genitals. So Nope. That scene in Nope, I had to like, that was the scariest part. I guess that's like light Nope spoilers, but there's a monkey scene in Nope.
Yeah.
And that was the scariest part of the movie for me. Aliens, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No,
a rampaging monkey. I'm done.
Done for.
David Attenborough had a series called, I think it was Dynasties, and it was just about like animal families trying to survive. And the episode about the monkeys was basically just Game of Thrones. Like, it started with the protagonist having been the victim of a hit. And he's lying there missing fingers, like, because chimps, they go for the face, they go for the genitals, and they go for the hands.
Yeah.
And so he's missing parts of his hands, part of his ears gone. His troop has left him behind. They've left him for dead. There was like a full coup that was pulled against him. And then it, like, we chronicle him pulling, it's like the Revenant, like pulling himself up, dragging himself across, like through the Central African rainforest until he finally finds his troop again, regains power.
Oh,
and like, there's multiple, like, he has to make new allies. And in by the end of it, it's like,
he
has a full arc.
Wow.
And then at the end, he does manage to reclaim power. But then they have like a blurb at the end. It's like, yeah, a few months after this, they killed him anyway. It's like, oh dang.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, chimps are hardcore, dude.
Yeah.
They chimps
really
do not
are.
Play.
They really are. Mm-hmm. I sometimes think that we're descended from them, and I'm like, I feel like you could tell I'm a big Planet of the Apes fan. I'm like, if it ever came down to it though, I think they have really good winning potential. They could use all our weapons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, we built them for them. You know?
Yeah, they could like punch us in the face and take our guns. Once again, the most American
they are going to take our guns. No.
Riding an army of feral hogs across the United States.
Me and Jeremy come into the podcast and are like, feral pigs and guns.
Oh my God. Me and Jess were like, please.
There was something I was going to say on the topic of nerd stuff, but I've forgotten what it was. How did you then make the transition? Because you mentioned going from like an uncool nerd, like a mathlete type, who I guess found artistic expression through homework, which I actually find that's actually kind of cool, to be honest. but then transitioning into a cool nerd. How did you get into TTRPGs professionally?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It wasn't really until, I guess, like adulthood, like I want to say college. I've been playing video games my entire life. So I've always been a gamer, always an avid video gamer. But around the time I moved back to America for college, like I said, a lot of the circles overlapped. Like, I did competitive debate, something I talked to Brennan a lot about. But
yeah.
I did some competitive debate because, once again, arguing your opinions was really fun for me.
Sure.
Serial killer behavior.
No, I wasn't thinking it. I promise you, I wasn't thinking it.
Jasmine, I haven't said it, but like, I relate to a lot of your experience. I was never on the debate team, but in fourth grade, our teacher gave everybody like superlatives just for everybody in the class. And I think mine was like Mr. Attorney or something like that, just because I was really argumentative.
Yeah.
For most of my life, I've had a reputation for being very argumentative. I probably still do. But I definitely had one like strongly when I was younger. And also, I hard relate to getting obsessed with something and then that becomes my personality.
Oh, that's a big same for me as well. Like,
yeah. It was dogs, then dinosaurs, then Harry Potter, then Spider-Man. Yeah. And then Spider-Man just sort of continued and then other superheroes and other comic books and then movies got into it to the point where like I was in high school and people would be like, can you please stop talking to me about movies? Like, and these were like adults. like, I don't want to talk to you about
this. So this is not in the high school. I was like, what are these adults doing in the high school? Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Well, teachers.
Bad for.
And then other adults that I knew.
I feel bad for some people because I think, like, I think in some sense, like, I can understand why I would have been hard to talk to back then, you know? Because I think there are people that they'll go watch, like, a movie and they'll be like, I liked it. And that's enough.
Yeah.
And I remember wishing, I was like, I wish I could just be like, I liked it. Mm-hmm. But that was never me. I'd be like, I have some very mixed feelings.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And also like to pull
these
it apart.
These things specifically.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And like, how did this work? Why did I like this thing the way that I did? What's similar about this thing to other stuff that I like and what's different about it? Do I like this thing better than that thing and why? Yeah.
Yeah. The comparisons also turn you into like an 8-year-old hater sometimes, you know, because everyone will be like, oh, yeah, I like, I don't know, Pokemon. And then you're like, you're comparing it to Digimon. So then you become the kid that hates on Pokemon. Like now that I'm like older and more mature, I know how to temper that. But I definitely exhibited some haterism when I was a little kid, you know, because if there was something, not even just because it was popular, but because like I had to, like you were saying, Jeremy, I had to compare everything. So I would always be like, well, the Lord of the Rings is better than that, you know? And now I know, okay, Lord of the Rings is good. You can also still like Chronicles of Narnia or The Golden Compass, Jasmine. But when I was like 10, no. How could you compare these things? Yeah, like clearly this is the more superior one. But it's
for me,
it's
it was
funny.
His Dark Materials versus Harry Potter, where I would be like, I enjoy Harry Potter more, but having read both, His Dark Materials is the better written series. That's what I would say when I was a kid.
Yeah, and so sometimes like that makes you like, other people see you definitely, even if you aren't as like a hater, like that becomes your whole persona as a kid of like, that's a kid that doesn't like Harry Potter.
Yeah, exactly. It's a weird kid.
He thinks also, he's too good for Harry Potter.
Digimon, better anime. Pokemon, better games.
Yes, 100%. That's Digimon, I remember I really liked the show and now I couldn't tell you single Digimon's name.
There were several movies. Garumon was a guy, right? That's it.
Yeah, there's Agumon, Gabumon. Yeah. I know a bunch of them.
Oh, wait, no, Gabumon. Cactus, that's who I meant.
The cactus one was like a main character, right?
Yeah. I don't. He was with Izzy. I think the cactus. It was either Izzy or Mimi that the cactus one was with. I think it was Mimi.
Was that Generation 2?
No, it was the first one. Cactus was the first one. Oh, it was, because another thing that I recently discovered in watching more anime, Digimon is an isekai. The first two seasons of Digimon are isekais.
Yeah.
And it didn't even occur to me.
Like, now, if somebody didn't know what an isekai was, would you explain it to them? I obviously know.
Yeah.
I know. So.
Of course, Liv. An isekai, for those of you who are sadly uncultured in this area, Nisekai is a subgenre of anime.
Argumentative stupid.
it's a subgenre of media, I guess. Usually like Japanese media, but I guess theoretically you could look at like, I don't know, Pagemaster, something else like that kind of fits in, where a person is taken usually from their mundane world, sometimes just fully killed, but other in some ways transported to a fantastical world that they now have to live in and adjust
as
to.
As soon as you said Pagemaster, I was like, no, I get it now. Thank you. I was like, okay, got it.
So it's like, oh, now he's in the books.
Like or the Jumanji. First D&D movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You've been transported to another world. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
So how did you get into the TTRPGs professionally? I feel like we got derailed again. We were talking about video games.
Yeah. A lot of the people that I was hanging out with at the time, because the video game and TTRPG circles overlap, were into Dungeons and Dragons. And it's really funny because the first time I went to a D&D game, I actually didn't enjoy it. I had spent like all of this time reading the book, making my character, finding a miniature that fit what I think my character roughly looked like. And, you know, I went to this basement essentially to play my first game and was promptly like sort of expelled from the adventuring party because I was playing a character from the Book of Vile Darkness. And it was, I believe, a cancer mage.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was like a...
Whoa. You went dark with that first character.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And so, I mean, 2000s comic books really influenced me. So I went like, oh, imagine like, you know, if instead of being resuscitated by cats, Catwoman was resuscitated by plague rats. And so I really made this like mage of like filth and decay. And this is before I discovered Warhammer. But of course, when I did Nurgle, very much, I was like... immediately drawn in. But I didn't real like, I guess like I was new, so new that I didn't think to ask like, oh, what kind of adventuring party is this that I should make a character for? So of course I come in and people are like, I am, you know, bronze in fell bottom and I shall say a prayer to my God. And so of course my freaking half dead cancer mage comes in and like, it became very quickly like, oh, we're not going to play with you. And I remember being like, you guys suck.
Yeah.
Get with the program.
Yeah. Broke up with the guy, too, that invited me.
Oh,
good
no.
for you.
Yeah.
Damn
I was like,
hit.
Fuck you. Are we allowed to curse
I mean, yeah,
on this
if
podcast?
He didn't stand up for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, you guys suck. And swore it off. But went to board games instead because I was like, why would I play this? Video games exist. And just play World of Warcraft. And but I did still like the game, like the mechanics. So I got really hardcore into Arkham Horror and later Mice and Mystics, like these really big sprawling games that kind of have a narrative built into them. Mage Knight was very into Mage Knight, and it really got me through because we didn't, I feel like then you didn't really have good examples of role play. As much as people like to complain that people look at shows like Dimension 20 and Critical Role and they think that's what all D&D is, the bright side of that is I think people have a better sense of how to act around a table now. But when I first got into the hobby, that wasn't the case. Like there was no sense of like, oh, here's a new player. Maybe we should make them feel welcome. It was like, this is an existing game that predates you for, you know, a long amount of time and you need to come and meet us at our pace, which is, I think, compounded when you're like any type of minority because
for sure.
Then you're like the only brown person or the only woman at the table too. So there's like an added layer of you already don't feel welcome. And even though I have respect for the fact that like, yeah, you know, maybe you've been playing this game for a year or so. But it's also like, it doesn't take much, I feel like, to be like, oh, hey, just so you know, this is a really cool character. It might not work for this campaign because this is the story, but they were just, it was such a
mean.
Yeah, really. Pretty that much, was yeah. it. Yeah. Mean. And I don't really put up with bullies. I'm very much like the, I'm going to take my toys and leave and flip your table over.
It also highlights the need for a session zero, I would say.
I was going to say,
if they'd have sat down with you ahead of time, been like, all right, so here's the tone. And everybody was like, we're going to be bright and happy and heroic. Yeah. And then you still brought that character. Well, then it's like, well, okay.
Yeah.
But to me, the fact that you would put in so much effort, they should have even respected the fact that you, like, it's your first session, but you went out and found a mini, you made a character.
Yeah.
It sounds like you were reading, like, extra books, like, beyond just the player's handbook.
Yeah, because we had, like, the player's handbook, which is, like, 3.5, right? And then you had, like, the extra books. And nothing in the main books classes, like, appealed to me, so that's where the Book of Vile Darkness came from, which...
The Book of Vile
Which,
Darkness.
If I had known... I would have been like, oh, but back then I didn't. I was like, this edgelord book This is the one that appeals to me. All the illustrations in here are so good.
I feel like with our first character as well, you have to get like that edgelord stuff out of your system for a bit, you know? Like just initially, like my first character was called Sunbeam the Destroyer, and she was like an elven rogue, and I was like, oh my god, I'm so edgy, and like, you know, fringe in the hair in the eyes and everything, you know. Mm-hmm. You gotta get it out of your system.
Yeah. I think it's a comfort thing too when it comes to role playing. It's something I can like put words to better now. Mm. At the time, I definitely didn't play this character to derail the story. I wanted the option to like be a quiet observer because I wasn't comfortable, you know, with the group yet and role playing yet. And when you're playing a character that's quiet and brooding, when there's things happening, you always have the option to be like, whatever you guys decide, you know? I think edgelords sometimes get a bad rap because people are like, oh, they derail the game and they have main character syndrome. For me, it was the opposite. I was like, if I play a character that's few of words, I can kind of watch the game and still be a part of it, but kind of choose my level of engagement until I feel comfortable enough to play a high charisma, very talkative character. I definitely wasn't ready for that when I started. And so I got really into like just tabletop, not tabletop RPGs, but tabletop. And what brought me back around to TTRPGs specifically is really funny. It was Mouse Guard. I was so into these games and I came across Mouse Guard. I love Redwall. I love like ant stories. Because when I was growing up, Secrets of Nim, every story was about like little anthropomorphized animals. And so I really wanted to play it. I loved the system. I loved how social combat worked and how you resolved encounters. And from a gameplay perspective, it's still one of my favorite games. I just absolutely love it. And I love running it. I love telling stories in that world. And I think the cool thing about Mouse Guard is it naturally puts players on the same page because everyone, you're part of the Mouse Guard. You've sworn to uphold. And so it allowed me to like get into storytelling in a safer way. Like there's no real way for you to make the wrong character for a Mouse Guard game because of the way character creation works. It's just, I think, a little bit more friendly. So I got into it.
Very structured as well.
Yeah. I really got into it. And from there, naturally found my way back to D&D and realized D&D doesn't suck. But for a long time, like we were saying, I compare things. So people would be like, oh, do you play D&D? I'm like, I play Mouse Guard. Mouse Guard's a better game. This is my mouse. She's really great.
Yeah. I mean, Mouse Guard is better at telling a Mouse Guard type of story.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, that, by the way, have you read the comics?
Yes. Yeah.
They're really good.
And have like really dramatic storylines. And
yeah.
And
it's like Watership Down meets Redwall. It's like his Redwall, but like everything wants to kill you and you are a tiny mouse
who is
fighting giant things. Yeah, it's great. It's really cool.
And sometimes even the stories you have in Mouse Guard are so emotional because you're part of nature, but you're also fighting nature. And so I remember my first time as a player, not as the game master, but like we killed this, I think it was a shrike, which is a really scary bird that drops its prey upon thorns and impales them. It's like, it's like something you would imagine is made up and it's real.
Yeah.
And they have them in, was a terror.
Liv, did you ever read or watch Farthing Wood? The Animals of Farthing Wood?
Sorry, I looked up a shrike and it immediately showed me what they do. And I was like, no.
Yeah. They save stuff for later by sticking it on spikes and stuff.
Sticking it on spikes. It's like if Vlad the Impaler was an avian creature.
The reason I bring up Farthing Wood is because that was a popular British kids series that's about a group of animals who leave their nature preserve, which is about to be bulldozed, and have to go and find another nature preserve. And along the way, a bunch of them die. And as they're traveling, at one point, they encounter a shrike and some of the baby animals get caught. Farthing Wood is insanely dark for how how there's an episode, I think, where Izza, aka Evil Clever Dog, was on, and we talked about the scene that still haunts me to this day with the hedgehogs in the road. But I won't subject you all to it again. Just if you want to watch it, go to YouTube and look at Farthing Wood Hedgehogs Road scene.
I mean, I don't know if I will.
It's rough.
Honestly, I'm looking at images on Google right now, and there's a lot of there's a lot of stuff I would have been traumatized by.
Yeah, Farthing Woods is a rough series. But yeah. Anyway, back to Mouse Guard and also your
Yeah. So my first time as a player, we encountered a shrike and we killed it. And we acted like we had killed the lich, right?
Yeah.
And
then, I was like, did you all make it out of there or
Yeah. And it was like we had killed Lake Vecna. And then we found a nest with eggs. And I think like that's what really solidified that I liked TTRPGs. Because I remember actually weeping because it was just such a conflict of emotion of like, this is a creature too. But also we were completely within our rights to kill it. But also like, what do we do now? What is our responsibility? Do we sit on these eggs? Do we keep these eggs warm? What do we do? Like, and that conundrum, I was like, okay, I think I'm hooked. I think this is like a form of storytelling I really like because in Mouse Guard especially, there's like no right or wrong. Like there's not a like that morality compass of like, oh, this creature's chaotic evil. It's like, no, it's a shrike and it's doing what shrikes do. It's a snake. It's doing what snakes do. And you have to defend yourself and your family, but there's not really malice in it. You're engaging in a game that has some violence, but you're not doing it because you want to kill it. And a lot of cases, sometimes you drive those animals off instead of actually killing them. So it forces you to come up with really clever solutions. So yeah, I'm still a big fan of Mouse Guard. It's a really great game.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. So how then did you go from being a TTRPG player to then working professionally in the industry?
It was actually comic books. So a lot of the content I made on Twitch at the time and what I think prompted Twitch to make me a part of the first class of ambassadors was I was making comic book content on Twitch, which at the time was really rare. Even now, there's not a lot of comic book podcasts or anything like that on Twitch. And so I had like spent time volunteering at a comic book store. And at this point, I was working at a game store, but I still was really into comic books. And so I had a show called Bagged and Boarded. And before that, I had Comic Book Wednesday with my friend Bass LaRock. And so we had like, we had been doing comic book content on Twitch for quite some time. And a studio invited me to be a part of a Valiant RPG, which I was somewhat familiar with Valiant comics. I wasn't 100% up to date, but I kind of knew about them. And from there, I naturally started getting invited to other games. But it actually started with like the Valiant RPG and like comic book RPGs specifically because I was a comic book girly. So if people were doing a game of Masks or something like that, like I would get an invite. And then I started working with Roll20 and running games for them and running games on my own channel. And it kind of just took off from there, which is wild to think about that my entry into this was comic book content creation and video game content creation. I feel like my ingress into the industry was a little atypical in that I've always been like a streamer first and a TTRPG professional second because I've always just wanted to make content. And this is just like one of the types of content I make. So a lot of times when people are like, how did you like get on Dimension 20 stuff? I'm like, my path is like really hard to replicate.
Don't even try.
Yeah.
Because I was like a Twitch. I was like a Twitch person and to a lesser extent, a YouTube person, like long before I was a D&D or TTRPG person.
Yeah. I think it's because...
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Twitch is your kind of own thing, isn't it? Because like you can control that really easily, whereas like, you know, getting a group together for like a TTRPG, that's it's a whole other beast. So
yeah,
that would be your main bread and butter.
Yeah, I actually in some ways I think that like my content creation with Twitch like perfectly like trained me to be on bigger productions, because I think of like when you're it depends, there's a lot of different types of content on Twitch. Some of it's just React content, but I always looked at projects coming in as like, what's new, what's going to be hero content, how much would this cost to make, you know, how do I promote it, how do I edit it, you know, it always came from that POV, if that makes sense, of like, you know, Twitch and YouTube are vehicles for me to make the stuff I want to make that probably wouldn't, you know, make it as a TV show, or wouldn't make it as, you know, wouldn't get picked up for like one of the streamers. And so I feel like coming into, you know, what's more almost like more traditional media now, because like Dimension 20 is like it's like a TV production studio, and they do things kind of more TV. I was like ready for it in that sense, because I already kind of knew like how to look at a project through that lens. It was never really five friends at a table. It was like, okay, we're gonna make a comic book podcast. So, you know, what are you comfortable time-wise putting into this? What am I comfortable time-wise putting into this? What kind of comics do you want to cover? There's no way for us to both read every single comic that comes out every week. Do we want to have a focus? What's the scope of what we want to talk about? How are our voices unique in this space? And a lot of people are like, that's a really clinical way to look at stuff. And I'm like, no, I'm a big fan of making things that I want to watch. And when you're making things that you want to watch, you think about these things. Well, what kind of podcast would I listen to? What do I look for? Is it audio quality? Is it people that discuss lore that I don't know? Is it people that make comic books accessible? Is it people that are experts? And so I think like that helped me when coming into D&D and other streamed games, because I didn't look at it as, let me get five friends together. It was like, what story am I trying to tell? And who do I think is best suited to tell that story? Who do I think is going to be comfortable on camera and conduct themselves in a way that won't humiliate me?
It's a strategic approach.
Yeah.
Like when people say clinical, I wouldn't agree. I agree with you. Like it's, if you, there's a difference between being like, well, I just really want to make a thing, so let's turn on a camera and jump on it and see what happens. Close your eyes, grip and rip sort of scenario where you're just swinging at the ball, hoping you make contact or you sit down and say, hey, I really want to be good at baseball, so I'm going to practice hitting balls and see what areas I excel at and what I'm getting into it. Should I be a pitcher? Should I be an outfielder? Like, what skills am I going to try and develop? How am I best going to... I'd say it's a strategic, sort of an eyes wide open approach.
Especially because when you make any sort of content and put it out there for people to consume, it is fair game to be criticized for it. And so I never really understood people that were like, oh, well, yeah, we don't have any minorities or women in our show because, you know, it's just my friends. I'm like, well, yeah, I have games at home that I run like that. But when you put something out there, you have to, it's no longer your home game. It is now a show. And you have to think about those things because it's like what you're saying. How do you improve your swing? How do you get better at this game? But also, how do you make sure you don't hit somebody with the bat? Baseball players wear cups and helmets, right? So I think sometimes like people will put people on camera that aren't ready for it, aren't ready for that level of scrutiny. You know, I don't say people that are going to humiliate me in a disparaging way. It's more like, you know, sometimes people conduct themselves in a way that surprises you. Because you've never seen them in that context. Because it's different when you're at home, you know, with a bottle of Mountain Dew. You can stop at any point and be like, that was kind of cringe. You're just going to hit on every female NPC. Like, what are you doing, bro? You can't do that in a game. Like when you're streaming it, especially.
Friends at the table make more allowances as well.
Yeah.
Like friends will make more allowances for like if you have a friend who makes a joke that's pretty edgy, but everybody at the table is like, we have an edgy sense of humor, but somebody listening to it is like, they don't have the context of, oh no, they is a good person and they don't mean this, that, or the other. Now it's like, whoop, it's left your hands.
And you naturally become defensive. Because you have 20 people telling you, I can't believe you said that. So your human response is a very human thing, is to be like, well, this isn't a big deal. And it's like, wow, they didn't even apologize. They just tried to mitigate, you know, what they said. And it's like, well, I think a lot of us when cornered tend to, especially the first time, which is why I said, if you're not used to being on camera, tend to react that way because you suddenly feel very put on the spot. And then maybe an hour later, you're like, I probably shouldn't have said that. And I probably should have apologized. But sometimes we don't have the space and grace to do that. So I'm very careful about who I put on a show or put on my stream. Not because I don't think, oh, they deserve to have eyes on their stuff, but because I have to explain to them, like, it's hard sometimes. Like you'll get unsolicited comments about your appearance. You'll get, you know, and people can react in different ways to that. You know, something you say is a small innocuous remark or a joke might be taken incorrectly or taken in a way you didn't intend. And it's better if you have practice at it, you know, if you've done it a few times or if you know that that's a possibility versus being put on the spot. I remember the first time I was on, you know, a TTRPG show and the chat predominantly was just like, how much people hated my character.
Wow.
And
that's not good.
Because this particular show, they would always have like the chat up on a screen. And I wasn't used to that because I was used to streaming on my own channel where people are generally, if they're watching my channel, they like me.
Yeah.
And it really got to me because it was my first time being exposed to like such a large amount of people who were very vocal about how they didn't like me. I was the new person.
Yeah.
And I froze. I just kind of like stopped talking. Yeah. I was like, I don't know what to do here. And then after that, I got into the flight went away and I got into fight, which was, okay, I'm going to double down on every annoying trait this character has just to piss you people off, you know, which wasn't the right. Now in hindsight, I can say that wasn't the right. That wasn't the right response.
Sounds like it's kind of funny to see.
It was. It was because it was like, oh, this is your favorite character? I'm going to bully this NPC for the next 90 minutes. I'm going to roast them.
Were the other players, though, in a position to, like, I don't know. To me, if I'm in a game like that and I, like, okay, our show is very good friends with NADPOD. Not another D&D podcast. And they have, anybody who's been in the NADPOD fandom for any reasonable length of time knows that in the past that Emily has gotten way more negative comments, largely just because she's a woman, than the other guys. Like, it's pretty clearly misogynist. And the other guys have stepped forward and been like, yo, stop it. You're being sexist, et cetera, et cetera. They've, like, stepped forward to her defense. Did any of the people on the show, like, I see the chat is being really mean to one of my co-players. I don't appreciate that.
Fuck off.
Please stop.
And I think it's because it was game industry like game dev industry people from Seattle. And I think that's what taught me the difference between people who are sort of in entertainment and content creation. They know like how to handle that versus people that aren't. Because it's something you learn to do and you see other people kind of lead by example. And at that wasn't present at that table. And so in a lot of ways at the time, I felt super unsupported.
Yeah.
And it made me question like my friendship with people because I was like, how could you watch me get torn apart?
Oh, yeah.
In the chat and your responses
to say
to wait the 3 hours for the game to be over and be like, hey, are you good? It's like, no, I'm not good. I just got lambasted for three hours as being a horrible person who's ruined the game. Like, I wanted to get up and leave. And the only reason I didn't is because I, you know, you don't want to be labeled difficult to work with or a prima donna, but it sucked.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there is like I think even to notice what it is like sort of insightful of you, Jeremy, because I think some people just don't even notice that like, oh, this person gets a lot more criticism than everyone else. I think they're like, sometimes I get a mean comment.
Yeah.
I really wanted to ask now, because we're running out of time a little bit, but I really, I would be remiss if I did not ask. Now that you are making DesiQuest, and it's a table of all brown people, have you, like, what has your experience been like in terms of fan response as well as just creating the work? Because I know we're talking about, like, the backlash that you've sometimes received for at other tables. What is it like now that you're the DM? It's really you're one of the main parts of the project. What's that experience like?
Yeah. Creative directing and executive producing is something I never thought I wanted to do. There's times I knew I wanted to creative direct. I didn't know I wanted to executive produce. There's times I still don't. I'm an introvert. But I think one of the best parts of that project and something about having that power, I don't use that word lightly, is being able to ensure we have a good set culture and being able to ensure that we run the business in a way that is representative of like sort of the type of experience I would want to have at a table at a game. The players very much are part of the story, and I think the biggest thing I've sort of taken away from being in a game with nothing but people from India and Pakistan and like the Desi diaspora is like how different we are in a lot of ways, but also the same. It's oftentimes shocking to me how diverse like India is within itself. Like we have so many different languages, so many different cuisines, and different stereotypes that go with each of us, and it was fun to learn more about the culture by engaging, like me as a Punjabi, engaging with people from Gujarat and how even their taste buds and the things they enjoy are so different from what we enjoy. And it made me realize that like a lot of people think that, oh, if you do an all Desi game, you know, isn't that like kind of like narrowing your scope? And to me, it's like, no, I felt like it was like widening it. Because you don't get that level of nuance when you have one, you know, Gujarati character in a show. You only get that when you see what it's like for Omar, who has a very different heritage than mine. But the two of us are actually from the same part of the world, which is kind of funny. He's like from the Pakistan part of Punjab, and I'm from the India part of Punjab on my dad's side and the Pakistan part on my mom's side. So it's like him and I will sometimes form a block. Because like we will have very strong opinions about like food or how a word is used or how a phrase is used compared to like the Tamil speakers at the table or the Guji speakers at the table, and like what goes in a samosa, what does not go in a samosa, because the language and the food has changed drastically in its journey throughout India, and seeing people respond to that, like being like, I always felt like I was a bad Indian. I hear that so much. But I love seeing people at the table that are like, oh, I'm quote unquote whitewashed, playing alongside people that have spent their lives there, speak the languages. It becomes more welcoming because sometimes I think even within our own cultures, we can sometimes be very exclusionary. You know, we've all heard these things like, oh, you're a coconut. You're whitewashed. You talk white. You have white taste in music, you know, like that type of thing. And so I think the most cathartic part of it is when you finally have five or six of us at a table, you realize you don't have to be the model minority. You don't have to be the perfect embodiment of your sort of like, I guess, ethnicity or racial designation to for the entire media. If there's five or six of you, you suddenly get to be yourself. Because there's no right way to represent any culture or ethnicity. And having that pressure taken off, I guess I had never realized that that pressure was there.
Yeah.
Until it was taken off. That like, oh, I don't have to be a perfect example of perfect sort of embodiment of my culture. I can just kind of be myself and show that there's a lot of different ways to be brown or black online. Yeah. There's not one right way and one wrong way.
I think it was like a similar feeling for me joining 3BH, honestly, because like I like having regular contact with two friends who are people of color who were black, and we can just be like, yeah, oh, we vibe on this, we understand each other. Like it was life changing for me, and it's such a validating like feeling, isn't it?
Especially, I think one of the really special things about what you're talking about, Jasmine, is that certainly for me, a lot of the pressure that I have felt to fit in with an in-group comes from the in-group, not even from the out-group. So like, if I feel like I don't fit in with a certain group of black people, it's not because a bunch of white people told me, it's because of how that specific group of black people may have acted towards me. And I think that the pressure is understandable. Like, I think my understanding is that a lot of immigrant kids have that issue. And also, I'm not the children of immigrants, but I certainly had that issue as well, where I felt like because of my interpretation of it was because of how black people and other minority groups have historically been disenfranchised in the United States. There is a necessity that we all have to pull together and we all have to be on the same page. And there's therefore an expectation that a person who fits into this category should present a certain way, act a certain way, talk a certain way, like certain things. And it's an understandable expectation, but it's sometimes wrong. And it can result in responding really negatively to someone who doesn't fit that, even if the person who doesn't fit it is not intentionally being like, well, all the stuff you like is bad. like, well, I think all hip hop is trash. You know, something like that. Yeah, it's one thing to just, it's like, well, I'm sorry. I didn't grow up listening to that. I've never really heard it. I've only really heard this. I like this. But I think it's wonderful that the fact that you had a group of brown people who were able to, like, from different cultures, who were all able to set those pressures aside and just be like, hey, let's accept ourselves and each other because we're all bringing different perspectives and experiences. Yeah.
And I think like what you're talking about is so correct, but also magnified when you're on camera. Because if there's like one desi person or one Asian on a cast, then it becomes like, I didn't even know Jasmine was that background, you know, like it becomes like, she doesn't even look, you know?
She doesn't have the accent.
What languages does she speak? And it's like, well, I've never had an opportunity to prove that I speak three languages. So how would you know that about me? Right. Like, so then it becomes
why do you have
like,
to prove yourself to people.
Yeah. You have to be the perfect embodiment, like, because you're the one Asian on the cast. So you have to be. And also, why was it this type of Asian? Why wasn't it this type of Asian? And it becomes
why didn't you acknowledge that historically what this particular subgroup of Asian may have done to that particular subgroup of Asian?
Yeah, and like, this character you're playing is an asshole. Sucks that the one Asian is playing an asshole, you know?
Yep.
Play what I want. I can be an asshole if I want to.
And so it's like that pressure is gone too. Because, you know, I'm very aware that with the part of the country I come from and my racial makeup that I am light skinned. And so I totally agree that, you know, we need to have more darker skinned South Asians in media. I completely agree. But this is like one of the times where, you know, sitting in makeup, I was like, and seeing everybody's like foundations laid out on the palette, I was like, wow, like I don't feel bad taking that spot, right?
That's like, such a minute thing, but like so good to
We have like a spectrum Yeah, you know, from Omar, who's the lightest of us, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to say who's the darkest because there have been debates about it. sometimes we compare our tans because we want to be darker. but it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, yeah, like it's kind of nice that, mm-hmm. you know, you don't feel like, oh, I have to represent every facet of the culture perfectly. Mm-hmm. And it was really refreshing talking to Sandeep about that, who was like, I don't really, he used to say to me, when I see Sandeep, I'm like, oh, when it comes to casting calls, you're so clearly Indian. And for me, people are like, what is that? I don't know what that is. And like, no, but you are a real Indian and I'm not, because I don't speak these languages. And us like talking about that was so, he's like, you lived there for half your life. And mm-hmm. I don't feel like I get to take the spot of an Indian who's actually lived there, or actually speaks the languages, or knows every little thing about their religion and their culture. And I was like, I love that we're making the show, because now mm-hmm. we get to see every sort of part of it. Mm-hmm. There's no one right way to fit into a culture. And I think when you're the one diversity hire, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I don't understand the criticism of like, I wish they chose a darker skinned Indian. I get it. Mm-hmm. But it's nice where it's like, why not both? ¿Por qué no los dos?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. For sure. Yep. The end goal is for there to be no issues with needing diversity cast, because mm-hmm. it's just, yes. there's so many people in the industry that there's no reason to complain, because it's like, well, there you have a lighter skinned Indian person on this show, but on this show you have a darker skinned Indian person.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the,
we're not all, we shouldn't all be fighting for the same spot. Right.
Exactly.
My, which is something we've discussed.
I shouldn't
show,
be taking but, yeah. my spot from someone else. I should just, we should all just have our spots. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Jasmine, this has been a wonderful conversation. I wish we could go longer, because there are so many other things that I really wanted to talk to you about.
Part two?
maybe a part two. Yeah. Let us know if you're ever available. But before you go, we have to get a tale from the table. It's contractual. Yeah. Our dark overlord, Jamal, has demanded that all guests must give us a tale from the table, which is a fun, engaging, well, not necessarily fun, but a memorable experience that you have had playing TTRPGs, whether as a player or a GM. It can be tragic, triumphant, horrifying, hilarious, anything you want.
Mm-hmm. This one happened recently. I have the pleasure of actually playing a father-daughter combo on Acquisitions Incorporated, which is mm-hmm. really a new experience for me. But I'm really good friends with Jerry Holkins. And for me, ACK Inc. was the first D&D podcast I ever listened to, like even before I played D&D.
So it felt
really full circle to come in and play Omendron's daughter. But as a gag, I created a pet rock. And throughout the course of the game, at one point I used this pet rock as part of a catapult spell, because it was a pretty hefty pet rock and I had it like on stage with me, and I accidentally sent the rock through a portal to hell.
Oh no.
Oh.
And one of my fondest gaming memories is my character's dad, Omendron, going to hell to get the pet rock back.
Oh,
literally walked to hell to get a rock.
Number one dad with
felt hot right glued there. To it. And it was, he almost died. And I remember thinking,
with it,
if he dies, this is how we have to say, well, how did he die? He went into hell to retrieve a pet rock.
He died for a very noble reason, actually.
the tale really of Orpheus and Eurydice, but Eurydice is a rock.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. It's like something like out of a Greek tragedy.
Oh, wow. That is amazing.
That's fantastic.
Jasmine, thank you so much for joining us. This has been an incredible conversation. And
thank
genuinely,
you for having me.
If you ever want to come back, we would love to have you.
For real.
Do you have anything to plug? Please. Mm-hmm. Plug whatever it is you have.
Watch This Quest. It's on YouTube. You can watch it for free. And I'm that bronze girl everywhere. If you like Warhammer and even tabletop content, I even have a YouTube channel and a Patreon now where I talk about Warhammer and tabletop. So yeah, I'm everywhere. That bronze girl.
All right. Liv, where can the folks find you?
Oh, you can find, if you want to, you can find me. I am on social media. I'm at Does Dark Magic. And if not that, I'm Olivia Does Dark Magic. So one of those guys. Yeah, we also have a website. It's 3blackhalflings.com. You can check that out.
Liv made it. It's great.
I did. Yeah. There are some things I need to edit on it. So like it'll be better. But yeah. and we have a Patreon. And we, okay, look, I keep saying this, but we're doing really good on the Patreon right now, guys. Like, there's a lot of really exclusive stuff up there, and it's very regular, and there's a lot of fun, like, stuff that you wouldn't get if you weren't on the Patreon supporting us, so you should check it out.
Speaking of comic books, I am doing a series on the Clone Saga, followed by a little series on One More Day, two of the most infamous infamous Spider-Man stories ever. Mm-hmm. So if you want to hear that, hop over to the Three Black Halflings Patreon. And you can follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Jeremy Cobb 1. That's Cobb with two B's and the number one. You can follow me also on Twitch, twitch.tv/casualquestlive, where I, who am not a gamer, I pretty much only played Pokemon, which was another one of my personality defining obsessions for quite a while. So it's me being introduced to classic video games for the very first time. I recently completed Fallout New Vegas, Metal Gear Solid. Mm-hmm. We've got Metal Gear Solid 2 lined up.
Oh my God.
Halo. Right now I'm doing Baldur's Gate 3 and Disco Elysium. Disco Elysium being the only game that I've played before on the show.
Good game.
It's good, right, Jasmine?
It's really good. It's so good. Oh my God. Everything you've named is a banger. Everything you've named is a banger.
Doing it right, Jeremy.
Yes. We've also, I think we're going to do, Deus Ex Human Revolution. Yes. We're going to do, I think, Deus Ex Mankind Divided pretty soon as well.
Cool.
So. Yeah, it's good. Great lineup. And you can follow the show at 3, that's the number 3, Black Halflings, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I believe the OnlyFans is back up and running. So if you want to jump over to 3BH OnlyFans, post it. See some real hairy feet, but no hairy feet for free.
No.
Terrible. With that.
wait, we also have a live show. We also have a live show April 5th in London. You should come hang out and we'll be live.
And buy tickets and come see us. No, actually, speaking of, we're probably going to be debuting some of the characters from our Redwall game, our upcoming Redwall series. Speaking of Redwall, we're going to be debuting that at the live show.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It all comes back to being playing mice.
Exactly.
Exactly.
With that, so long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
Say it too, Jasmine.
So long, Shire folk.
Yay!
It sounded like I said Shire fuck, so I apologize for that. But, you know.
that's also on the OnlyFans.
Oh, no! Whoa!
That was a HeadGum Podcast.